done for the money. You know, the team that projected to win the EPL struggled, really, really struggled against Hull. But you know, there at the end with Remy's goal, poor hands by, well, not even poor hands, poor legs by the Hull City, just hit him right in the legs and dribbled into the back of the net. That's a heartbreaking loss for Hull against such a big team. And I really think that Chelsea are going to have to, as they move forward, they're going to have to watch their backs. You've got City, you've got Arsenal, you've got Manchester United, you've got Southampton, you've got Tottenham that are making pushes here late at the end of the season that are, you know, producing good results, and Chelsea struggling against a Hull City. That cannot bode well for the Blues moving on. So they will certainly have to put their time in, continue to put their work in on the training pitch now that they're out of the Champions League. They can fully turn their attention now to the battle at the EPL.
Three.
Looking over at Manchester United and Liverpool, it was good to see as a United supporter myself, it was good to see Van Gaal use Juan Mata and what a game that he had, tucking away a beautiful bike in the 18 into the bottom left corner. No chance for the keeper. Just what a tremendous finish. And even the announcer went silent for about a minute before he came back on and said, sometimes you just have to let the action speak for itself. You sometimes have to just let the play do the talking. And Mata certainly let his play do the talking in that game. Another interesting twist to the Liverpool United game was I'm not quite sure what it was, the stroke that Stevie G had on the pitch comes on, and within 45 seconds of the second half, just stomps Herrera right on the leg and gets a red card. I just don't understand how such a seasoned veteran coming on for his last game at Anfield could do such a thing, could do that and could just go out like that. It reminds me of Zidane going off in the World Cup back in 2006 and just headbutting Marco Materazzi and just exiting like that. And I just don't quite understand why players of such caliber that have had such big careers would choose to go out like that in front of their fans. But certainly an interesting way to go out for Stevie G before he later on will join a stateside in the MLS. And so as we look here at the table towards the end of the season, we see Chelsea at 67 points, Manchester City at 61, Arsenal at 60 points, Manchester United at 59, Liverpool at 54, Southampton at 53, Spurs at 53, Swansea at 43, West Ham at 42, Stoke at 42, Crystal Palace at 36, Newcastle at 35, Everton at 34, West Brom at 33, Hull, Aston Villa, both at 28, Sunderland at 26, Burnley, they're in the 18th spot at 25th, QPR at the 19th spot at 22 points, and Leicester City at the very, very bottom of the table with 19 points. And I say all of that because it seems that at the top seven spots of the table and then at the bottom five or six spots there, it's very, very close. The point totals are very, very close. And, you know, between the third and seventh place teams is only 7 points. So here at the very end, here at the end of the season, we're going to see a big push from these teams, as well as the very bottom relegation zone. These teams are going to be fighting their way out. And that is all the time that we have here this evening. Just want to give a big thanks to Austin Clue for coming in and helping out and giving a lot of great insight and feedback. Really, really appreciated his help. Big thanks and shout out to Alec Hildebeitel behind the glass for producing the show. Thank you to Braxton for that great interview. And thanks to Travis Brent for coming on, taking time out of his schedule to be here on the show with us. And very, very quickly, we have some big, big games coming up this weekend for international games. We've got England and Lithuania. We've got Spain and the Ukraine. We've got Russia and Montenegro, Sweden and Moldova. And then for Major League Soccer, we've got New England and San Jose, Montreal and Orlando, D.C. and L.A., New York Sporting KC, and a slew of other games that are coming up. So I am Tyler Fraley, and until next time, this has been FC 88.1.
Boom. Nice job. You're out.
Thanks for listening to FC 88.1 on WMUL. For the latest podcast, check out our website at www.marshall.edu/WMUL. Until next time, this has been FC 88.1.
A recent study found that the average American spends 8.5 hours in front of television, cell phone, and computer screens a day. Let's say that the average American lives to be 75 years old. That would mean that the average American spends 26 and a half years in front of screens. That's over a third of someone's life.
Let me know what you need.
Imagine a world where you spent the first third of your life in front of a screen.
Great job, Tyler. I know.
Imagine your only source of satisfaction coming from the sense of closure you get from watching the resolution of some petty, fictional 30-minute argument time and time again. Imagine the stale laugh track from some inane sitcom mocking you, recorded from a disembodied studio audience. But then imagine going outside for the first time in 26 terrible years of isolation and feeling actual sunlight on your face. Do yourself a favor. Go outside. Enjoy your life.
Right, 5 seconds here.
This has been a special reminder from WMUL 88.1, The Cutting Edge.
Type 2 diabetes is a serious chronic health threat in America. It affects tens of millions of people. Many people who have the disease don't know it. Diabetes can cause health problems such as heart disease, strokes, amputations, and blindness. Talk to your doctor, get screened if you're at risk, and learn how to avoid becoming one of the millions of new cases of diabetes each year. You can help prevent type 2 diabetes. A message from CDC and HHS.
This is SportsView, WMUL's premier sports talk show, featuring guests from Thundering Herd Athletics. SportsView is presented by the award-winning FM 88 Sports Team. Now, here's tonight's host of SportsView.
And good evening. Welcome to Sports View, segment number one. I'll be with you for both segments tonight. We'll start things off with some Marshall football set to join us in just a little bit. It'll be the defensive end coach from the Marshall football team, Sean Cronin. He'll be calling in on the phone lines. We'll talk about Marshall football back in spring camp as some subtractions, some additions to the team. See how things are going after day number two. As I heard, got back underway yesterday afternoon over at Joan C. Edwards Stadium. James Collier with you. I'll be with you until the hour of 8 p.m. We'll talk some Marshall football here in the first segment up till 7:30. And then at 7:30, I'll be joined by Tiffany Pratt and a few members of the Marshall women's golf team. We'll talk some women's golf, a tournament coming up here soon for the ladies team. We're getting ready to leave this week. Men's team already on the road. They're headed down to Furman. Have a practice round tomorrow, 3-day event beginning Friday down in Furman, South Carolina, Greenville. So we'll check up things on the links and see how things are going. Let's talk some Marshall football as the Thundering Herd returns to get ready for the preparation of the 2015 season. And for the first time in 4 years, at number 12 on the field, but it's a different number 12. As there's no Rakeem Cato flying around. And that's something that is obviously going to be something very interesting to see who is going to step up in that quarterback race and fill the void left by one Rakeem Cato. The other side of that is you have, I guess, three guys that are really going to compete. Gunnar Holkum, the redshirt junior now coming in that was here last year, but now is going to be competing for the job of Michael Birdsong, and obviously the incoming frosh that arrived on campus in December, Chase Litton. Those are the three guys that are going to compete for this position. And reading some stuff today that Coach Holiday and Coach Legg both talking about, this is a great instance to have, is the fact that they get an opportunity in the spring to really get a look at all three of these quarterbacks, figure things out, and have a quarterback going into fall camp. That was not the case with Rakeem Cato. Rakeem Cato was not named the quarterback until that 2011 season when they tabbed him at the quarterback position at that point. So definitely a great opportunity for the team to be able to take care of that. But some other things to certainly look across the other side of the ball, and that's the defensive side. Some big names that are now gone across that defensive line. You've got Armon Blackman, Rashadi Myers, James Rouse. Those guys are gone, but you go back and you see the guys that are standing there waiting to come in. Gary Thompson, who played significant time last year, worked through an injury, came back towards the end of the season. Joe Massaquoi stepped up, played some big minutes when this team needed. Ricardo Williams, defensive tackle. That's one of the things I'm going to talk with Coach Cronin here in just a bit. Is he going to stay as a tackle? Will he move out to that DN? And, of course, Armand Daniel. So many players that are available for this Thundering Herd team, and one of the things that Coach Holiday talked about in his postseason press conference was the fact that he doesn't want to rebuild. He wants to reload. And I believe that's certainly where this team appears to be headed as we move forward. Let's go straight to the phone lines. Joining us now, the defensive end coach for the Thundering Herd, Coach Sean Cronin. Coach, good evening. How are you, sir?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing wonderful, Coach. Hard to believe it, but football is back underway. Spring football for you right now, but definitely an exciting time for the Thundering Herd football team, ready to start building on what it finished last season, getting itself back in those national polls after the big win down in the Boca Raton Bowl. Tell me about the excitement around the camp and how things are going here in day number two.
Well, we're really excited about spring practice, but the football part of it doesn't start till Saturday. Right now we're running around. I call them pajama practices. You're not allowed to practice in pads until like the third day. So we will have uppers on Saturday and start hitting a little bit, and then we'll be in full pads next week. So for defensive and offensive linemen, the real stuff hasn't really started yet. We're more working fundamentals, technique, and, you know, running the defenses and offenses.
I know, talking with a lot of the defensive and the offensive line guys last year as summer camp started, as you said, it's a progression that the first 2 days, nothing. It's no pads whatsoever. You go uppers on the, as we call them, shells, the second and or the third and fourth days, and then you go full pads on the last day. But those guys in the defensive lines, the guys in the trenches, they said, no rest for the weary. We still go at it. And these guys, they get after each other even without the pads.
Oh, it's still full speed. It's still full speed for sure, but there's just something a little different about when you have the pads on and it is a thud period, like we call it, or a live period where we're really hitting.
Coach, let's talk about some subtractions first from the team, specifically in the DN position. Rashadi Myers, Arnold Blackman, how big of a loss does those two guys individually make across that defensive line before we talk about the guys that are standing there ready to step up and fill those holes?
Well, it's an incredible loss. I mean, Rashad Myers is one of the smartest guys I've ever coached. He's high football IQ. He's just a tremendous human being. He was a great leader for us. Arnold Blackman, you know, he came in and had his best year of football as his senior year, which is what Coach Holiday always talks about. That's when you know you're going to be really well, really good, is when your seniors play well, and they did. And Arnold was probably the epitome of that. He just had a breakout year. You know, I think he led us in sacks and made big time plays when we needed it, and just had a tremendous year. Those guys are definitely going to be missed, both from a football standpoint and from a leadership standpoint. You know, like you mentioned, and we'll talk about them individually, you know, as you want to. But the good thing for us is we do play a lot of guys up front, so you know, we just had to develop the leadership, you know, aspect that those guys gave us with these guys that they've seen it done. They kind of know how it's supposed to be done, but they have to learn how to do it themselves. And that's kind of where we're at now.
We talked about Arnold Blackmon, and he leads the team in sacks. And I think he really, the game I go back to where he really busted loose was the Miami game. The end of the ball game, he finishes out with two sacks to close that contest out and really put the Red Hawks away. But that was the game that really vaulted him into the leadership role, the having the significant play on that outside edge, and especially with the guys that had to be replaced with Jeremiah Taylor and Alex Bazzi, the two guys being gone. No, nothing against those two players, but players really stepped up this year to make sure that those guys, they were missed in name, but they wasn't missed on the field.
Well, and I hope that we're at a point now where that is the case. I mean, Coach Holliday's done such a tremendous job recruiting and the classes of guys that we brought in here. You know, we're really – one thing we are is we're really deep on the defensive line. And so you hope that when those guys graduate that another guy can move into that role and then use that off season of growth to kind of catch up to those guys so that when you do get into – you get through camp and you get to that next year for those guys – that they're a year better, just like the guys the year before. So seniors got to play like seniors and so on and so forth. Everybody's got to get better, and there's a standard. You know, in our defensive line with Coach Price and I, and you know, our players have really, you know, set a high standard of what it means to play defensive line at Marshall. We have a great tradition. You know, when you go into our meeting room, there's a sign in our meeting room that says, earn the right to be in this room. And it's got all the great all-conference defensive linemen, all the former NFL players who played defensive line at Marshall, and it's a huge list. And there's a tradition and a standard that's set there. These guys, you know, these older guys we have that were maybe, you know, backups, but they were in the rotation. They were playing real reps last year. You know, they understand what that standard is. And right now they're trying to learn how to teach that to the younger guys so that when they leave that those guys can play to that standard. We call it a dog standard. They call themselves the yard dog. And yard dogs, and play with the yard dog mentality, kind of that mangy mutt that you have out in the yard that's chained up to a post and tries to go bite everything that walks by. That's kind of, you know, what their moniker, that's kind of what they model themselves after, as opposed to a house dog that would be sleeping on the couch in the air conditioning and being lazy. So, you know, there is a high standard, and I think our guys have done a great job living up to it. And that's kind of a testament to the job Coach Holliday's done with recruiting. And he's always been known as a great recruiter, and, you know, the cabinets are stocked and we're excited for another good year. I mean, he has very high expectations. He's been very clear about that since before we were winning, when he first got here, what his vision was for this program. And so not just in the defensive line, but across the board, there's a standard that was set before he got here, what Marshall football is. And, you know, we play for championships is what, you know, was always said around here in the 90s. And so we feel like we're back there, and that's what we need to do, and that's the standard here, and that's all that's going to be acceptable, no matter who's on the field.
Joining us on the phone here on Sports View, the defensive end coach for the Thundering Herd football team, Sean Cronin. Coach, going back to something you brought up, and I'll kind of build off of that as we go to talking about each one of those players individually that we brought up earlier, but the yard dog, the mentality that these players have, they actually have a dog collar and chain that they bring with them every day to practice. And I know you and I've talked about it several times last year, but these guys, this is something that they take very seriously each day that they come to work, and they can actually have their dog tags taken away if they're caught not working on the field at practice or in the games, correct?
Yes. Yeah, that is absolutely correct. It's living right. It's living up to a dog standard. It's performance on the field. It's performance off the field. Just proud to say we just gave Blake Keller his dog tag today. So he earned his dog tag. We're excited about him and the effort that he's brought to us. And there's a lot of guys that have done tremendous things. Steve Dillon. I mean, I can go on and on about defensive linemen, but, you know, Coach Price and I just gave Blake Keller his dog tag today, and it does mean a lot to him. And they do. Coach Price and I went out into a junkyard and got this junkyard chain for it, and it's a big, big, huge leather collar with spikes on it, and it's got a dog tag on there like a bone, and it says Marshall Yard Dog off the chain award winner. So if you win it that week, then you get to keep the dog collar, and you put it in your locker. And it's your responsibility to take it out to practice every day. It's your responsibility to take it out on game day. It's underneath our bench, and that the off the chain award winner each week gets that. But then, like you said, they also have their dog tags themselves that they keep if they're doing everything right.
Coach, you brought up one player that I want to get to, so let's go ahead and get to the individual players that returned from last year's the team that saw some significant time on the field. First two guys, let's talk about Gary Thompson, Joe Massacoy. Thompson suffering an injury early, really battled back, played some big minutes for you guys there at the end of the season. Tell me about those two guys. What do they bring to the table, and how much they have to step up this season to fill those roles of Blackman and Myers that are gone?
Well, like I said, those guys have played a lot of football around here, and so, you know, you've kind of seen how they were as players last year, and we hope that they're even better next year, or we're not doing our jobs right. They're both dedicated guys. You know, Gary's just really been hampered with injuries. You know, he came out his freshman year. He had a great year for a freshman. Was hoping he would have a breakout year this past year. He had a solid year. But he was kind of hampered with injuries and fighting stuff all year long, and he never really got the chance to type of year he's capable of, and I'm hoping that's going to happen this year. We're excited about what he can do if he's locked in. And then Joe, the exciting thing about Joe is his best game that he's had yet was the bowl game. You know, so he's still getting better every day, and he needs to. And both those guys need to continue to raise their level. There's a lot more in the tank there that those guys can improve and to play to our level and what we're used to seeing. And I think they can definitely get it done, and that's what spring's all about.
Another guy in that mix, Armand Daniel, definitely a second guy coming in off the bench, gave you some great minutes last year. What does he bring to the table this year to be able to step up and try to compete for one of those spots on the field?
Yeah, and he started games here now, too. I mean, Armand Daniel he's everything we were about. I mean, he is a tough dude. He comes to work every single day. He's a blue-collar guy who he's basically the epitome of what we stand for. What Coach Price and I, you know, preach to those guys, he is that. He doesn't have bad days. He practiced yesterday. He was sick as a dog, but you wouldn't know it. Nobody knew it, you know. So he comes out and goes to work, and, you know, because of that, he's made himself into a good football player. You know, when I first got here, he was still learning how to play defensive line, and he had a long way to go, but he has really, taken hard coaching, and he's been really focused on improving, and he's gotten a lot better for sure. And he's a guy who's just kind of willed himself into being a guy who's in there in the game when it's on the line, important situations, and definitely is a guy, you know, competing for a starting job for sure.
Coach Cronin joining me now on the phone lines talking some Marshall football. Coach, one of the new guys that into the team this year had to set out last year to the transfer, but the transfer from UCF, a team that Marshall fans certainly remember from UCF's days in Conference USA, but Blake Keller earning his dog tags today as a member of the Yard Dogs. And tell me what Blake brings to that defensive line, especially on that end position, that can bring up the pass rush and really get after the quarterback in the backfield for the opposition.
Well, you know, Blake's another guy who's actually started the Division I football game. You know, so he's another guy who's a returning starter. But I think he started the games. Armanza started games. Gary started games. So we have some guys with some really good experience. Blake Keller is a high motor guy. You know, and as far as pass rush is, you know, a lot of it's get off, and a lot of it's just effort, will, and want to. And he definitely has that. You know, there was a play yesterday where he kind of got his feet crossed over and he fell and he just rolled up. The ball was thrown as he was on the ground and he rolled right to his feet and just started sprinting down the field because that's to chase the ball because that's the type of guy he is. I mean, he is a high effort guy, a lot like Alex Bazzi was, high motor guy. You know, so he brings a lot of energy and we're excited about what to see what he can do here this spring.
Well, Coach, you talked about the defensive line, but several names behind that defensive line that are gone as well, but some big names that are ready to step up, especially in that linebacker core. You bring back DJ Hunter, had a great year, maybe arguably his best season since he's been with the Thundering Herd. But you have guys like Raheem Husky, Stephon Houston, that are ready to make that next level. And going back to Raheem Husky and what he was able to do last year, the conference championship game, probably his best game he played the entire year.
Oh, there's no question. He played tremendously in that game. Played tremendously in that game.
Well, some interesting notes to take away from spring practice. We enter for the first time, and I know it's difficult to say this, and especially as Herd fans around the area hear this, you look out on the field, and for the first time, you see number 12, and you have to do a double take because it's not Rakeem Cato. In the spring, it's Chris Williams Hall. Did you catch yourself doing a double take the first time you looked across and saw 12 out on the field?
No, I didn't. You know, I knew Cato wasn't there going out, so no, I wasn't really thinking that. You know, I'm excited about these quarterbacks, and I hope you know, one of them really steps up and takes the reins there. But we have some really talented guys, you know, for that position that are going after it, and I'm excited to see them grow this spring. And you know, like you said, the linebackers, I mean, all over the place. Chris Williams Hall is, you know, he's definitely a corner. He's a natural corner, and there's guys at every position right now battling, and you know, we're pretty deep and talented, and it should be exciting here Saturday when we put the pads on.
Talking about the quarterback position, how beneficial was it to have someone on the scout team last year, like Michael Birdsong, who had the playing experience from James Madison, was really stepping up, has a very live arm, can run an offense at the speed that you guys saw much of the time last year? Did that really set you guys up defensively to go out and see live game situations exactly what you see every Saturday when you strap them up?
Oh, there's no question. I mean, there's no question. That was definitely a luxury to have him. You know, we've been really lucky the last few years. Some of the scout team guys we've had because of transfers and stuff. Ricardo Williams did it for a year. Blake Keller did it for a year. Michael Birdsong did it for a year. Sean Petty did it for a year. He's another one of those linebackers who we're excited about. You know, but Michael Birdsong, you know, he's tremendous talent. He's got a great arm. And he's run an offense before. So we're excited about him. Definitely has a big-time arm. Gunnar Holcomb, you know, he played really well in every game he played in this past year. Cole Garvin is, you know, coach's son with a lot of intangibles. And then, you know, there's a lot of those guys are tremendous. I mean, it's going to be really interesting. That's going to be one of the great things to watch this spring is those guys compete for that job.
Coach Cronin, the defensive end coach on the phone lines here on Sports View. Coach, you spent time with Coach Holiday at Florida, and you was part of what happened there. How much do you see the same thing happening here at Marshall that you saw when you was with Holiday in Florida, the same philosophy, the same game plan, the same kind of pack your lunchbox and go to work attitude day in and day out?
Well, you know, there's a lot of similarities between, you know, what he does and what Coach Meyer did at Florida. Obviously, Coach Meyer has been an influence on anyone who worked for him. A lot of the people who have gotten head coaching jobs have had a lot of success at work for him because a lot of us, a lot of those guys do, you know, carry very similar characteristics and philosophies for sure. But, you know, Coach Holiday does, you know, he's a little bit different and he has his own twist on things and obviously has been really successful for us. And I think the biggest thing that he's done is, you know, in addition to philosophically what we've done is just the way he's been able to get great players here. And it's always easier to do when you have great players and you know, everybody's different and he is his own guy, but he's certainly influenced by Coach Meyer. And it is a little bit like that where, you know, once you turn the corner and you just get a lot of momentum and the standard is raised, you know, no matter what your philosophy is, that's going to make everything better for sure.
The mastermind behind the defensive side, Coach Heater, tell me what it is about him day in and day out that he brings to this Thundering Herd team that makes that defense click. And last season, he really raised the bar, wanting more from that defense than the years past. And outside of the mishap in the first half of Western Kentucky, this defense pretty much locked down every team it went up against.
Well, first of all, he's a really tough guy. I mean, he's an old school guy. He believes in toughness, as we all do. You know, he's going to demand, he's going to set a standard. He's going to be very clear about what he wants, and then he's going to make sure that you're living up to that or you're not going to play. The luxury that he has is, like I said, we have some really good players, so if you're not getting that done, he's going to get somebody else in there that will. But he's just, you know, he likes to allow those guys to play fast. He doesn't want them thinking a lot, and he doesn't make things too complicated for them. He lets good players play really fast. And I think a lot of times as coaches, we try to reinvent the wheel and we think we're gurus and stuff. But at the end of the day, the players are the ones that have to go and perform. And that's what I think he's great at is just, you know, keeping those guys in a situation where they can have success, putting guys in situations where they can have success, getting them in matchups where they can have success and letting them go play. You know, we've worked together, I think, 8 years or something like that now. I'm not sure exactly how many. It seems like 100. No, I'm just kidding. but no, he's always had success, and he's a tremendous defensive mind, and it's just, you know, our whole staff it's just a blessing to get to go to work with those guys every day.
Coach, one final question before I let you go. Each Saturday when you step out on the field there at the Joan and you hear the crowd, what is it that gets you going so much about hearing all the screaming Herd faithful, Rowdy, and Joan C. Edwards?
I'll tell you what, I mean, it's funny because I was just talking to a recruit yesterday and telling them the same thing. You know, the special thing about Marshall is it's more than a game. It's more than a game here. It means more than just football. This is the way football was meant to be played. This is the atmosphere it was meant to be played in. These are the fans that it was meant to have. I mean, this community, the way it gets behind its football program, it's unbelievable. It's special. It's very unique. It's different than anybody else in America. We have our own story, as Coach Holiday always says. You know, it's just the late Dr. Kopp, you know, I remember he said at a fountain ceremony once, he said, Marshall's big enough to matter, small enough to care. And I think that really describes this community and just there's nothing like being in the Joan. I was just talking to our sports information director about our home record. We have one of the best home records all time in college football history. And that's a testament to the fans. I mean, that's all the fans. It's hard to play there. It's loud. Our guys get excited. They there's something about it, man. It's just it's a special place, and I don't know. Sometimes it's like they're looking down off that hill up there at the memorial and just looking down on us, man. I can't describe it. It's just different, special, and I'm just really lucky to be a part of it.
Defensive end coach for the Thundery Herd, Sean Cronin, joining us here on SportsU. Coach, hard to believe 30 minutes is up, but it's been a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining us this evening.
All right, thank you. Have a great evening.
You do the same. Take care, Coach.
All right, bye-bye.
That's going to do it for segment one of SportsView. We'll step aside for break. We come back, we'll be joined by members of the Marshall Women's Golf Team. That's coming up right after this. You're listening to SportsView on the cutting edge of your radio dial, 88.1 WMUL.
You're out.
Ball is in the air. We're underway at Jones Seaver Center.
Don't just listen to the game. Find out what to expect with the WMUL pregame show. At least 15 minutes before every game, the FM 88 sports team discusses the key matchups and strategies.
Marshall is going to have its hands full with Memphis's athleticism and speed all night long.
I really think that people want to see the ball go to Cody Slate. He's a fan favorite.
You got to play simple soccer. That's what you do. You want to pressure, but you don't want to overforce things. If you gamble and take a chance, a team like SMU will take advantage.
On down the line, you see a lot of depth and a lot of capability. This team has the ability to get hits every single time they go to the plate.
They're able to move the ball around really well. They have four players with over 100 kills. And they're a great team defensively.
So before kickoff, tip-off, first pitch, or first serve, get award-winning analysis from an award-winning station. The WMUL pregame show, only on 88.1 WMUL.
Timmy, don't forget to brush your teeth before you go to school.
No, Mom, I don't have time to brush my teeth.
Timmy, if you don't brush your teeth, they'll rot.
Little did Timmy know that would be remembered as the worst day of his life. After not brushing his teeth, he walked outside, and a car drove through a puddle, splashing Timmy, getting him soaking wet.
Oh, no!
After walking to school drenched, Timmy got the news that he was failing all his classes, and then was kicked off the rugby team.
Oh, man!
On his way home after school, a gust of wind blew Timmy's hat into the street, and when he went to get it, he was struck by a vehicle.
No!
Now sporting a full body cast, Timmy's girlfriend Jill dumped him. Because it's not cool to go to prom with a mummy.
Did you know that thousands of Americans suffer from cavities every year? Remember to brush your teeth after every meal. Who knows what it could prevent? This announcement brought to you by your friends at WMUL.
Welcome back to Sports View, segment number two. James Collier, your host. I'm here with you until 8 p.m. tonight. We're joined now in studio by Marshall Women's Golf, two players, and Coach Tiffany Pratts. I'll let each of them go around the table and introduce themselves, and then we'll get started. So, Coach, I'll start with you.
Hey there, I'm Tiffany Pratts, the Women's Golf Coach.
Hey, I'm Sarah Halley.
Hi, I'm Gone. I'm senior.
So just Gone. Is she? Are you like the? You're almost like Prince. You've just adopted. No last name or anything.
Okay.
Just...
Full name is Gone. I got Sims very long.
Okay.
But I go by Gone.
Very good. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us. Oh, you're great. You're great. Coach, let's start with you. Getting ready to leave to head to some familiar territory that you're very familiar with from your time when you spent at Maryland. But tell me about the season so far. Two tournaments in the books. What have you liked? What have you not liked? What are you trying to work on and expand on this next tournament up in Maryland?
Kiowa was a great first start, I think, for us this spring. We hadn't been outside, and we played really well down there, finishing top 15. Last week, it was a little rocky. The golf course, I don't think, really set up well for our team. Moving forward, we probably won't return there. But we've been outside all this week, so we're really looking forward to it. We've played golf every day. It's been gorgeous out, so I think we're really ready to go this week.
For you coming in your first year with the team, how important is it for you just to be able to get out on the course, see what the girls can do, what their strengths are, what they can work on, their weaknesses, and really bring that into practice, as you said, being able to get out on the course each and every day in practice sessions and work on those weaknesses?
You know, that's always important, whether it's my first year or my 15th year. I think every team's different, so you've always got to be evaluating and improving on everything. But us being outside has been huge. And being able to play at Augusta State, even though we didn't play well, we learned a lot. So I think that was a really big thing for us, is we had a lot to work on this week. And we knew our short games were a little rocky, so we've worked on that yesterday, and we played Monday and today. So it's looking good. I mean, everyone's hitting the ball well. We're going to change up the lineup a little bit, I think, going into this week. So we'll see what happens.
Gone for you. Let's talk about your experience with Marshall Golf and the leadership that you really bring to the team. For you, how important is it for you to, especially in your senior season, to step up and really cement a good foundation for all of the players that's coming up from behind you of what Marshall Women's Golf is trying to become and leaving a good legacy when you move on?
It's so important. I'm so sad to be leaving, but it has been such a great experience here, and I love being there for all my freshmen and sophomore, and, you know, just the new people, honestly. It's really rough, you know, to think that this is my last semester. Being at Marshall here has been amazing. I love every single bit of it, and it's so important to me to be there, to, you know, because they look up, you know, they look up on us, and I just think that, you know, me and Sarah here, you know, we have a little more experience with golf than any of them, so we're their role model almost of the team, yeah. So,
Sarah, same thing for you as a senior. How much leadership role do you have to really step up and try to show the younger players what's expected each day at practice, each day on the course, to be able to become that leader once you and Gon move along?
You know, I think your job really as a senior is to be a good role model and set good examples, because, you know, you've been in their shoes, so, you know, you kind of just, you know, want to, yeah, set a good example and show them what's expected of them.
Coach, having two seniors, such as the two ladies that's to my left, for you in your first year, how much has that benefited you of trying to really get things settled in, get the program moving in the direction you want it to go?
No, it's been huge. I mean, both these girls have played really good golf, especially for me this year. They both stepped up. I know Sarah last year was in her first year here, but she's played really well this year, and they both started the spring well, and it's been nice to have them kind of as two people behind me that were always going to back up everything that was going on, because, you know, you're not always going to get, especially as a new coach, everyone to agree with you. So they've kind of, you know, been there when the girls haven't really liked what I've said, liked what I've done. They've kind of backed me up and really been like, you know, there is a reason why I'm doing it. I'm not doing it to be mean. I'm not doing it to be unfair. There's always a reason to everything I'm doing.
And Sarah, for you, some good success starting the season, named Conference Golfer of the Week, and coming off a great start of the season. How big was that for you in your senior year to really step up and get out to a quick start?
Yeah, no, it was a big confidence booster. I felt like it happened at the perfect time, my last semester. I'm a senior, and like it was my first tournament of the semester, so it's a good confidence booster for the rest of the semester. So, yeah, no, it was great.
Gone for you. Your last tournament out, you really increased your performance on the court, or on the course, excuse me, and improved as you went along. For you, how important is that as you move into now getting close to mid-season of taking things that you want to work on the course and seeing that production whenever you finish out on the scorecard?
I feel like, you know, every round you can improve a stroke or two always. If you shoot 65 or even, you know, 80, you can always improve every single stroke almost, but it's very important, and just knowing that, you know, I can improve, and like you said, being the role model of the team, or it's important for them to know that, you know, because I didn't have a great, you know, season last year or before that, and for them to see, you know, you can always improve, and it's great.
Yeah. Coach, one of the things that you talked about coming in, I know from the press release, talking about the short game really let the girls down in the last time out. How much, but knowing that kind of information coming back before you leave for your next tournament, how much does that really allow you to focus in on what needs to be accomplished before you leave for Maryland?
Yeah, it definitely dictated our practices this week. Like I said, we did short game yesterday. We're doing short game tomorrow. A lot of it, too, is just getting confidence again. I mean, it's not that they don't know how to hit the shots, and it's not that they haven't done it before. It's that we haven't practiced outside. So being on grass in Augusta State, the greens weren't forgiving. So those shots that we got away with at Keele or might have been like, okay, and we could make a putt. Augusta State, there was no breaks. I mean, you hit a bad shot. I mean, Sarah hit a shot where she hit a decent chip shot right behind a green. It actually rolled 60 yards off the green, trickling to the next tee box, and it wasn't a bad shot. So things like that happened. I think more or less we knew we had to practice, but we also knew what we had to forget. And Augusta State was a tough week for everybody. No one really played that great. Even the leaders, they shot some good numbers, but these were top 25 teams in the country. It's what you expect out of them, even on courses like that. And I think our team's rebuilding and we're changing a lot. So it just, it was more on me than on them. I think it wasn't good scheduling on my part as far as getting us there, but I think we learned from it and we'll move on.
Well, and you take away, one of the things you said, probably not a course that you plan on returning to, but if you don't take away the scores that you post on this, how much do you go back and look at the mental edge that it helps create, especially for the younger players trying to work through a course that's not forgiving like that early in the season?
Yeah, I think, you know, there's always stuff you can learn from it. The younger girls, I mean, today at practice, one of our younger girls went out and played great, and she struggled last week. Same with, you know, Leah was down in North Carolina this past spring break practicing all week, and she came back playing well. So you just have to find the good things. I mean, we all hit good shots. They did make some putts. I mean, you just have to – there's always a silver lining to everything, but I think more or less we're just trying to move forward, and you can't look back, so we're just looking to this week and going to go from there.
Gawn and Sarah both, I'll ask you the same question. Gawn, I'll start with you first. When you go out on the course golf, how much of it is physical and skill, and how much of it is mental when you tee it up on the first box and then you finish, as she said, on a course that's not forgiving whatsoever on that 18th hole?
I would say 50-50. I love the mental side of it. Honestly, I feel like I'm pretty good at the mental part. I learned to, you know, forget the bad shots and always be optimistic, and that is what I love about golf. And, you know, you apply that into your life, and, you know, you always look up and never down. And, you know, you if you go out and have a double on the first hole, say, hey, you have 17 more holes to play, so let's just get onto it and make birdies. And I love that part of it, yes. And also physical. Golf can be really exhausting sometimes, you know, playing 36. So mentally and physically, sometimes you just want to come back to the hotel and just lay on the bed and just go to sleep. You know, you don't want to do any homework or anything. I would say 50-50 for me.
Sarah, how about you?
I think I would have to agree with that. Mentally, yeah, it's very important to be mentally positive. And you know, at this level, we all have a good amount of, like, a good skill level. So, I'm trying to think.
I feel like, you know, at this point, we all, you know, like, we all know with our own golf swing and is able to, you know, fix it right on the course when, you know, something would have happened to it. So the skills part is already kind of there. But the mental, I feel like it can, you know, hold you back a little bit.
When you're having, say, a tough day on the course, you have to really try and think as positive as you can. Even though it can be hard, you just got to keep fighting, because at the end of the day, one or two strokes matter a lot. So I think it's very important to be mentally tough out there.
And as you've mentioned that, you step out on the first hole, you put a double on the card. You really have to focus to get yourself back to where you need to be, because you have 17 holes that's waiting on you, and you can't let that explode into a big round.
Yeah, but and then some of my rounds in the past, I've started with a double, and they've ended up being great rounds. So you kind of have to look back and think like that, you know, and just remember I've come back from this before. So yeah, it usually, sometimes you start with two birdies in a row and then you end up shooting an 80. So, you know, it can be one or the other.
Now, Coach, I'll ask you, I didn't want to give them the easy part. Physical, mental, which part do you feel is, if, or do you think it's 50-50?
I don't think it's 50-50 at all. I think it's more 70-30, and it flips 70-30. When you're at home preparing, I think it's 70-30 more on the physical side. And when you're at a tournament, it's definitely 70-30 more towards the mental side, I think, because once you've prepared and you get to a tournament, it's all between your ears. You know how to swing a golf club. They know what they're doing out there. So it comes down to just where their head's at and how they're going to get it around. I joke with them a lot. that I can tell the second they get out of the van in the morning before they hit a golf ball what they're going to shoot. And, you know, I really believe that when they come down to breakfast in the morning, their attitudes, everything, how we're all interacting, I think it sets the tone for the whole day and you can really tell. So I would definitely say it's more mental even from my playing days. You get in your own way or you can help yourself out there. And I think the difference in college golf with them is, you know, you have four teammates out there too. And in the past two tournaments, they've only had three other teammates with them. So we didn't have that luxury of dropping a score. So I think they had a little more pressure. And I think for the most part, they really stepped up to it and they had each other's backs. I mean, there was no give. Everyone gave 100%, even on those rough days. It could have gotten a lot worse than it did.
For you coming in your first year with a team, you had to learn them. They had to learn you. Which one, 50-50 across the board, or is that one a little 70-30, 60-40 as well?
As far as learning them, I'd say it's easier for me to learn them than them learn me. I've done this for a while. I've seen a lot of girls. I've worked with a lot of personalities. For them to get to know me is probably a little more difficult. You know, they have a coach that's totally different than what they've had in the past. And, you know, except for Sarah, that's the only coach they'd ever played for. So you're used to one personality type, and I came in here, I'm probably totally different. Not in a good or a bad way, but it's just totally different. And, you know, I've dealt with, I don't know how many girls I've coached, 24, 20-something. So I've kind of had to adjust before, and I think I'm pretty good at adjusting, but I think it goes both ways.
Gone for you, coming in, having a new coach your senior season, was that a difficult adjustment for you of trying to know, one, what you wanted from your senior year, but at the same time, knowing what Coach Pratt's expected of you as a senior?
Definitely was a little scary at first when we had no idea who this lady is and she's going to come in and, you know, coach us. You know, me and Sarah have talked about it too. You know, it's like, I don't know who she is. we were kind of scared, but then it turned out great. Like, it was great.
Yeah, because we had the whole summer. We only found out during the dark. In the middle of summer that we're getting a new coach, so we were thinking throughout the summer, oh, I wonder, is it going to be a male or female? Or
is my senior year going to be okay?
Yeah.
Well, and Sarah, for you, I mean, what was the kind of the thought process going through your senior year? As you said, it's you're only your second year here with Marshall, but not really to know what to expect. Was there some kind of some uncertainty of what to expect for that final year?
I think, you know, yeah, we were getting a new coach, but Marshall knew what they were doing. They were trying to make a positive change. This was going to be a good change, and they were trying to move forward. So I was a little nervous at first, but it's worked out fine.
Coach, let's talk about the tournament coming up this weekend. You've got another big event, a golf course that the team's not familiar with, but you're very familiar with, because this is in your old stomping grounds. Tell me about the course, what really sets up for this weekend, and how you expect your team to go into and compete.
Yeah, Four Streams is in my backyard. We used to practice there. You know, it's a great golf course, pretty wide fairways. There's a little bit of trouble. Rolling hills, bigger greens. You know, I really think the team stacks up well there. We have a group that hits it pretty long. And, you know, I think we're not going to say we have expectations, but I think we all know where we plan to finish this week. And I see this playing pretty well. You know, I think everyone's ready to go, and it's going to be all about putting there. We're going to hit the shots into the greens. It's a matter of if we're hitting them in the right spots and if we're making the putts.
And on this course, how much does you being on this course before, how much does that help you get out with the team and really show them the correct way to attack these greens to set themselves up to be able to score rather than just trying to go out and shoot around?
I think it's big, because a lot of times in practice rounds, I'm having to create yardage books and they're creating their own yardage book or copying mine later. This time I have it done. I have a game plan of how we're going to play. You know, I've kind of looked at this week when we're about playing, and the yardages we've been playing, they're all similar to what they're going to see this week. So I think the practice round, we're going to change things up a little bit. We're not necessarily going to play a full 18 holes where we're just hitting a lot of shots. We're going to go out there with a purpose and really have a game plan to really separate the golf course and come out on top this week.
Gone for you, going into a tournament that you maybe not be familiar with the course, but having someone such as Coach Pratt that she knows this course like the back of her hand, how much do you use that as a resource of preparing yourself before you even get a chance to step on the course?
It's huge. It's huge to have her knowing, the course on the back of her hand. It's big, and a lot of golf is course planning, you know, where you hit the ball, where you want the ball to land, where you want to putt, and where you want to be and don't want to be on this course. Just a matter of fact of getting it there. And I feel like, you know, we all can do that. So I feel very confident about it.
Sarah, one of the things that Coach talked about, said this team hits the ball rather long. How much does having the ability to know kind of the areas that where you can safely attack a green off of the tee and other areas that where it's safer to lay up and try to set yourself up with a good second shot coming in from there?
Yeah, no, it's very important. I think, you know, course management is a huge thing, and I'm thankful that I've played this course before. I played it last spring, so I like coming back to a course, and I didn't do too bad last time, but I know I can do a lot better. So yeah, it's nice knowing the course and having a coach that knows the course pretty well. Yeah, it's a big help.
And Coach, one of the things that I picked up on when you said wide open fairways, for the most part, those seems to be the type of courses that people can get into trouble rather quickly. How much does course management play into a fact of the outcome of the score that you shoot on a course such as this?
Yeah, wide open fairways, the key is just picking small targets. The girls kind of joke around that when we're out in the practice round, I always say the targets, I always find a tree. Seems like any time they guess, they can usually say, well, just find the tree in the fairway. That's what Coach said the target is. But it's just a key of focusing on small areas. And into the greens, with big greens, you know, you just have to dissect the green. And sometimes you're not going to hit it necessarily where the pin is, because that's not the best place to have a putt from. So, you know, I'm confident the girls we're taking, they all can hit those shots, and they know where to miss. And if you're going to miss, you always have to have a plan. You can't short-side yourself. And course management comes up, but I think the big thing is just letting yourself play. The big thing I can say with this team is they've gotten in their own way when we haven't played well in rounds. It's not necessarily the bad shots. It's that they've gotten in their way. So if they just go out and they execute the game plan that we're going to have, then they'll be good.
Gone for you, going out through your 4 years here at Marshall, how much do you look back, especially in your first few seasons that you played, and you see yourself trying to force a shot at that pin that you know you should probably take the safe out and try to get the two-putt, rather than now as a senior, you know the safe play is to get the two-putt and get out with par and move on to the next hole?
I always think of birdies, honestly. I don't think of, you know, just easy way in, easy way out, unless I have, you know, long putt or get up and down, you know, trying to play safe with those. But honestly, like me and Coach would be on a par three, and she was standing behind my my swing, and it was like, okay, aim at that hump right there, at that hill, and you want to draw it in. I'm like, okay, got it. Just hit the ball. That's where it is. Mostly feel confident about it and always think, like I say, positive, think of birdies.
Same thing for you, Sarah. Do you always look to attack, or are there times that you know that the safe play is here, get the two up and down and get out with a par?
Yeah, there's times when you should be attacking, and then there's times when you gotta play smart. And, you know, sometimes when I get into trouble, say, off the tee, I try and think smart and say, okay, worst scenario, take your punishment and come off this hole with a bogey at worst. Because sometimes if you get into trouble off the tee, you can get greedy and then you end up walking off the hole with a double or a triple. So, and then, yeah, so that's how I play sometimes, yeah, most of the time.
Got about 10 minutes left in the program, joining with Marshall Women's Golf. This is a part of the segment of the show that I really enjoy. This is where we have some fun and talk about some of the fun things about the game of golf and things that you've had throughout your career. And, Coach, I'll put you on the spot and start first. What's your most embarrassing moment on the course? Playing, not as a coach, but as a player.
Embarrassing moment. Oh. I know what Gabby's embarrassing moment.
I can think of one of our players. I don't know that I can think of one. Yeah, actually I can. I was playing golf with Nancy Lopez one day. We had the same swing coach, and we were playing together. I was really nervous playing with legend. We're out on the golf course, and I notoriously hit the ball pretty far. So we both hit it in the middle of the fairway, and I assume that my ball's the one down the middle of the fairway, and we're walking, and I don't pay attention to the ball behind me. So I just keep going, and she's like, hey, Tiff. I'm like, yeah, what's up? She's like, this is your ball back here. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she started laughing, and she's like, so I'm going to give you a lesson. She's like, when you walk by a golf ball, you give them the courtesy look. So it was pretty – it wasn't my ball. It was hers. But she was just giving me a little heads up that you don't just walk past a Legends golf ball and not give her a little recognition, I guess, is probably the most embarrassed I've been by.
So a little bit of a mental gut check as well, I guess you could say.
Teach me to be a little more humble, I think.
Yeah, I guess so. Gone, how about you?
I honestly cannot think of one right now, so you want to come back to me.
Sarah, have you got one?
Yeah, I remember I was playing in the Scottish Women's Open Stroke Play in Royal Troon, and my dad was with me. And the first hole is a par 4, but you have the beach on the right. It's a tight fairway. And I step up on the first tee, this big tournament and looking to do well. My dad there watching, and I basically hit the ball so far right that, it goes onto the beach, nowhere to be found, re-tee, everything. And my dad just looking at me like, what did you just do? that was probably my most embarrassing moment on the course because there was a lot of people there and, it was pretty embarrassing, especially to hit onto the beach. Yep.
You got anything at all? Okay, well, Gon, I'll let you off the hook. What's your favorite moment that you go back and think about on a golf course?
Favorite moment? Playing golf with my dad. I really miss that, honestly. Just old friends that I used to play golf with, and it's just tough not being able to. My dad and all my friends from around everywhere, like in Thailand and in Mississippi, I really miss playing golf with them. And maybe one day, we'll reunite and go play. But that's golf for me, to enjoy it with those people that you love.
Sarah, for you, favorite memory on the course?
I'm not copying you, Gon, but I would have to pick my dad. He taught me the game, and he handed me a golf club at the age of 3, and so he got me into the game. And I love going out playing with him, and we always have this tradition before I go head back to States to college. We always go out the day before I fly away and play 9 holes together. And so, I cherish my golfing days with my dad. And I also have another good golfing memory was when I got to play in the Irish Open Pro-Am with Darren Clark. So I got to play 18 holes with him, and it was a pretty cool day. So I remember that very well.
Coach, you talked about Nancy Lopez. What's your favorite memory on the golf course that's not an embarrassing moment?
I think a lot of mine comes more as a coach and a player, but as a player, I'd have to say it's great playing with my family, but my college golf days. When I was at Miami, we had a really great time. We had a great team. I'm still really close to a lot of those girls. It's crazy that you go to college and you can't look back on a ton of people that you're friends with, but my teammates and I all still talk on a regular basis, whether it's through social media now or on the phone. We all have stayed in contact, and, those tournament wins. But then as a coach, it's really cool when you get those first wins as a coach, and I haven't had my first win as a head coach yet, so we're getting there, but I've had a few as an assistant, so we'll see what that one's going to probably be, one of my most special. So,
all right, one final question around the table before we wrap things up. You could choose any golf course in the world to play. Where would you go?
She already played it. She already played Augusta National. I'm a little jealous.
Okay, now I'm jealous.
One of my favorite golf courses ever, and no one's going to have ever heard of this golf course. It's not super famous. It's in Charleston, South Carolina. It's called Gaiman's Hall. And it's always going to hold a really special place to me. It's where I played my first college golf tournament, the city I was born in. It's a really cool golf course. There's only 100 members. Hemingway was a member there. Goes way back, and it's more historical. It's not a golf course that's flashy, but there's a lot of history behind it, and I think that would probably be my favorite.
Gon, for you.
I would like to play Augusta National. It's very exclusive, and the little bird around here, I got to play it several times already. Definitely jealous.
Yeah, no, I'm actually the same. I would love to play Augusta. It's just one of those courses that you just dream of playing. It's so perfect on TV, and it's a golfer's dream.
Well, Coach, fill us in before we wrap things up. What was your favorite memory of Augusta?
Oh, I think all of it.
Can't go wrong.
30 seconds.
Yeah. Probably aiming corner, just that stretch was a lot of fun. It's a great golf course, though. It's a great experience. I've been there. It's probably not my favorite, but, they're saying, everyone wants to play it, so it was great.
Tiffany Pratts, gone, Sarah. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure. Hard to believe 30 minutes is up, but it's been a lot of fun. Certainly pleasure meeting both of you tonight.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having us.
Thanks
for having us.
Great. Best of luck this weekend down in Arapahoe, up in Maryland.
Thank you very much.
Take care. That'll do it for Sports View. We'll come back in about 2 minutes, and we'll have our roundtable discussion with Andrew Harrison as it's Sports Buzz. You've been listening to Sports View right here on The Cutting Edge, 88.1 WMUL.
Thanks for listening to the award-winning Sports View. Tune in again next week at 7 p.m. for more Sports View on the worldwide leader in Marshall University sports coverage, WMUL 88.1.
The adventure of a lifetime. Destiny will be revealed. Bear witness to a living legend.
We've got to get out of here.
I know!
It's coming!
No. It's here.
The Cutting Edge. Slicing through the airwaves to a radio near you. WMUL 88.1 FM.
And the Herd is going to improve to 6-5 and get bowl eligible for the first time since 2004 with a 34-31 victory.
Snead draws three defenders, cuts through with the left foot. Can she finish? She does. What a play. Molly Snead dribbled from outside the 18-yard box and finally found the net.
Otano back to Caldwell. Right side rejected. That's not even fair. Right side. Just throws it out of bounds.
And Gomez gets underneath one. It's all the way back to the warning track. And the little Bucks club were there. They'd have a souvenir. Victor Gomez goes yard.
Sullivan set to mark him near side. Through a double block and out of bounds.
I have better things to do, like go eat.
When
Browns are a topic, I'll be in
the
there.
The worldwide leader of Marshall University sports coverage. WMUL FM. Huntington.
Where's Marquez?
It's time for Sports Buzz, WMUL's weekly sports talk show with a competitive twist. Four enter, but only one will leave as this week's champion of current sports topics. And now, here's this week's moderator.
Welcome to Sports Buzz. I'm your host, Andrew Harrison. And I'm joined alongside some maybe okay gentlemen sitting at the table, but James Collier, Akira Uchida, and I think we're missing a guy, guys. Marquez Davila is supposed to be with us tonight, but it looks like for right now it'll be Akira Uchida and James Collier on for Sports Buzz tonight. And guys, I want to get us started off some football action, some NCAA football. Former Michigan starting center Jack Miller earlier today has said that he will not play his senior season at Michigan due to as one of the factors being a concussion he's had before in his career and possible future concussions later on in his career. Is this a trend that you see for football that can change even more? Is there anything that this game can make be made safer in regards to, can the NFL, NCAA even do anything to change and make this game safer from being as violent as it is?
I mean, can you make...
The question I will have is, can you make it safer right now than before? Like, NCAA and NFL are doing like best they can. No helmet, no head to head, helmet to helmet, you know, tackles. So, and it also happens, and concussion is also happening. So I don't know how can you make it safer. And football is also known as most dangerous sport right now because of these concussions, you know, popping out. So I don't know if you can make it safer right now.
Before I address that comment, first off, I would like to say that I'm just here so I don't get fined. Second of all, Marquez, I've been looking for him since last year. Still haven't found him. But kind of going off of the thing that Akira was saying, I think football, college, and NFL at the same time, and even at the high school level, everything is bigger, stronger, faster. it's a victim of its own creation. And while the flashy plays, the mind-blowing hits, the collisions that you just sit back and you go, wow, and you see that on a network that runs sports 24 hours a day, and you think to yourself, oh, my God, how does someone get up from that? And it's one of the things that we're starting to see a trend is there's probably people getting up that shouldn't be getting up. I know one of the things the Big Ten is actually instituting this season, they're going to put an independent monitor that is going to be with the replay monitor, and they're going to be watching players on the field for concussion-like symptoms. I think that's one of the things, early diagnosis, early detection, that we really have to go with. But at the same time, we go back and look last year with the concussions that Wes Welker suffered throughout his playing career with the Patriots, now with the Broncos. You know, do we have to beef up the helmet in some form or fashion to where, yes, it may look like a mushroom that's on this player's head, but at the same time, we're trying to protect the most vital part of their body, their brain, their spinal cord, trying to make sure that they can have life after the game. And I think that's one of the things, it's really hard for, as a player, to say, I'm going to walk away from the game I love. But one of the things he said about the whole part of walking away is, he said, the flame is burned out, and I just don't have the passion to keep pushing. I think it's one of the things that kids are starting to look forward and saying, is it really worth $5-7 million for the type of life that I may live? I may be a vegetable by the time I'm 40.
And also the recent retirement with Chris Boland, he said he only 1 year of experience and he had retired from NFL. And I did a little bit of research about the newspaper. Ken Belson from New York Times reported the brain trauma that's been affect one in three players in NFL. That's been reported 2014, September 12th. And also this whole concussion issue that will lead to is the CTE, which is chronic traumatic encephalopathy. This is from Boston University research. CTE, I'm just going to read this quote. That's what is written down. CTE is a progressive degenerative disease of the brain found in athletes with a history of repetitive brain trauma, including symptomatic concussions, as well as symptomatic concussive hits to the head. CTE has been known to affect boxers since 1920s. However, recent reports have been published of new pathologically confirmed CTE in retired professional football players and other athletes who have a history of repetitive brain trauma. This also symptom includes memory loss, confusion, impaired judgment, impulse control problems, aggression, depression, and eventually progressive dementia. This is from Boston University research I read about, and I thought it was pretty interesting that Chris Boland has what the comment that he made. There's a lot more important things than football, which is to live healthy. And I think he did a little bit of research about it, as he mentioned. So these are the concerns around the football. So I don't want to say it's impossible, but it's kind of hard to make it safer right now.
Well, and Andrew, going with the same kind of thing of what he was saying, is that we see the young man making the decision at the young age of 20 years old to step away from the game he loves. And I think that's really the trend where we're on the fence of seeing where the guys that are veterans of football, that the old terminology of, well, when you had a big hit, you just had your bell rung. The problem of it was is how many concussions had taken place that we never had the abilities to be able to analyze, to determine that, yes, this player was concussed. And then by the time they get to the latter part of their career and they're suffering with Parkinson's disease and the concussion syndrome, as you were talking about, that a lot of people say, well, it was just Parkinson's disease that led to this the way it is. But how much is it on the backside of that, of all of this pounding of the brain, moving the head around and not protecting it the way that it should be, that led to that development? I think we're starting to see that barrier separate to where the research is there. The players are seeing the data that says, if you continue to play this game, this is the significant risk that you take, and your life is going to be altered significantly past the age of 30. Is that something that you're willing to give up? And I think that's where we're going to start seeing a lot of players step back, of players that maybe had risk and pushed it ahead and been a late round draft pick, trying to pull in a few coins that says, no, I think I've had enough. It's time to move on to something else.
Marquez?
The thing that did it for me, for the NFL and college athletes to keep on pressing about this issue and their health, was the Junior Seau death, and then the Kansas City Chiefs player who committed suicide because of, in front of the facility, because of brain traumatic injuries. I really do think it's a huge issue, and like James was saying, back in the day, they didn't have the complete technology to tell if one was got their bell rung or one had an injury. They would just like patch them up and send them back onto the sidelines. In today's era, now the NFL is getting stricter with the policies about letting the doctor approve them and letting them get back into the game for college and NFL. And I can see why multiple defenders of the case would be like, why would they put them back into the game? The helmets are getting, the technology and the equipment is all getting refurbished, and it's going to be even better with the time going on faster and later on in the season. I just hope that they somehow do figure out a way so we don't have to keep on getting lawsuits. Like, the former players are suing the league, and then they're losing players earlier in their career because of these issues.
All right. And talking still about NCAA football, loaded quarterback competition hasn't even really started yet at Ohio State. With JT Barrett and Braxton Miller still hurt with injuries early in the spring practice, but a guy like Cardale Jones still there, still the guy coming off the national championship. If you're Urban Meyer, who is your quarterback to start the 2015-2016 season?
It's got to be JT Barrett, because I know Braxton's a senior and he's did all that, but when it was his turn to pick up the job, he actually got the job. And just because of injury, I mean, the job shouldn't be given up. Yes, Cardale Jones won 3 big games for Ohio State, including the national championship, but that's only 3 games. Like, they wouldn't have gotten there without JT Barrett in the first place. They wouldn't even been there. And his one blemish was against Virginia Tech, and it was his second game, and it was a ranked game, and it was just a, I mean, you can't judge a guy like off of his one bad game that in his first season, because he was a redshirt because he tore his ACL the year before. But Braxton, I think he should transfer, and then they could have Cardale Jones as a backup just in case JT Barrett would get hurt again.
Well, see, I totally disagree. I think especially in the state of college football that it is today, you absolutely can judge someone on one game of what they do, because especially with the new college football playoff system, you're going to be judged on that one game, especially if it's a loss. And we look back at what happened in that football game. That was an absolutely deplorable outing for Ohio State and against the Virginia Tech game. But at the same time, Urban Meyer is probably in the best seat as any college coach in all of football right now. He has 3 guys that are viable options that he could run out at any given moment, and he has a great element on the field leading his team. Let's not forget, he also has 2 recruits coming in, one that was Mr. Ohio that comes in this year as his frosh season. You know, how many, as the old thing says, is that it's one too many roosters in the hen house. You know, how many roosters can you put in the Ohio State hen house before you run into a problem? Because he has 5. And at some point, I do agree with the one point you're saying. I think Braxton Miller needs to transfer or go away. But I think that this is JT Barrett and Cardale Jones' team. I liked Cardale Jones. I thought he did a great job of stepping up, leading this team. And to take away what Ohio State did, I mean, it was 1 quarterback, 2 quarterback. By the end of the season, it was, okay, what quarterback do we have left to throw out there? They had 1 guy that was left that was a redshirt that – had one of those last 2 guys gone down, he was going to have to burn his red shirt just so that they had a quarterback on the field. But Urban Meyer has a great problem right now, but I think Braxton Miller, he may have 99 issues, and Braxton Miller's not one.
I completely agree with James on that one. It's definitely JT Barrett and Cardale Jones' team. Who expected Ohio State to go that run without JT Barrett and Cardale Jones? Even, like, whoever thought this might happen. And about Braxton Miller, we were discussing about this last year during a sports buzz about who's going to be once he got injured, who's going to step up. And JT Barrett, that's the guy who stepped up, and he can run and he can throw the football. And just today, right now, it happened on by ESPN. Braxton Miller is under the media scrutiny right now, is where Ohio State is looking for potential NCAA rule violation by posting a photo of himself promoting health supplements on Instagram. So that media scrutiny is going on with Braxton Miller right now, and then Ohio State is under investigation right now. So I don't know how that goes, but definitely it's going to be JT Barrett and Cardale Jones's team. And also it'll be interesting what Braxton Miller will have to make a decision. Is he going to be transferred, or is he going to switch it to, hey, we're going to go with JT Barrett?
Well, on the other side too, with Cardale Jones, one of the things that I found very interesting about him was the fact that he puts the tweet out saying, we're here to play football. We're not here to go to school. You know, nobody really cares about going to school. And then the big decision comes out of, okay, everybody's expecting him. He's announcing he's going to the NFL, which I fully expected him to go to the NFL. I think it would have been a great outlet for him to go to the NFL because his stock was big. He could have gone in the first round easily. But now he decides to come back. And to me, for him to say that he's not there for school, he's there to play football, he had an early ticket to go to the NFL to get his millions, for him to come back, he has to know that the possibility is there that he's the front runner for that job. Because I'm not going to come back and sit the bench in front of JT Barrett and Braxton Miller when I know that this job is mine. I had an easy route to go make millions of dollars, but I decided to come back to school. Oh, yeah, the place that I don't want to be to begin with.
So, James, do you completely disagree with Cardale Jones' decision of staying in Ohio State?
Yeah, I think so. I think the kid should have taken the millions and run. He doesn't want to be in school. He's not there for an education. Get your payday, even if it's you get a 3-year contract, you make $5, $6, $7 million, and you move on with your life. But at this point, I don't understand really what he's after, because in all honesty, he has everything to lose now, nothing to gain.
Yeah, because like you said about his stock, if he would have went there, he would have been a good pick in the first round. Now that he's come back, he might not even have his job, or he could get injured in one of the first starts or something like that, kind of what happened to JT Barrett. But his stock, like James was saying, can go anywhere. But I'm, like you said, I'm confused on the reason why he had to come back is if he knows he's going to be starting, because why would he pass off millions of dollars and then he could be benched? Like, that wouldn't make sense to me.
Well, then also this, if you're Braxton Miller, is it worth even coming back, fighting for your position at starting quarterback? Do you even waste your time at Ohio State, or do you move on?
Well, the thing with Braxton Miller that he's in the problem of now is that with the injury, his stock has been really damaged to the point now he has to come back and prove himself. He can't just leave and go to the draft because he's going to cost himself millions of dollars, because Braxton Miller tried to go to the draft right now, he's not a first rounder. He's probably not even a third rounder. He maybe goes fourth, fifth round. And then at that point, there's no guaranteed money there. You have to play yourself into a contract. He needs this season to be able to step up and show teams in the NFL that he still has it. He is still the same guy he was before he was injured, that he can step up and be the leader, the next face of a franchise. So this season is more about what Braxton Miller needs out of Ohio State, not what Ohio State needs out of Braxton Miller. Silence. I love it. Move on. Next topic.
All right. Earlier this week, reports and documents came out that UAB had already made a decision to cancel football before this year's season, by also hiring a PR firm to kind of set in motion possibly the plan and weathering of the storm afterwards. Does this give UAB an even bigger black eye, and can the school recover in the public eye with this stigma anymore?
I mean, if you're talking about the school in general, just because of one big sport going down, I wouldn't say they wouldn't be able to make a full recovery, because as you saw, they made it to the NCAA tournament and they made it to the second round. But for a football team to cancel, like to sign all their recruits and then know that they're going to cancel the season afterwards, like you said, then why would, like, they should tell the recruits that and then not have them waste their time or transfer somewhere else? Like, because that, I mean, just to the recruits, like, oh yeah, I'm going to sign here, I'm going to be here 4 years, I'm going to get my degree, and then to be told that there's no more football, it's going to be canceled, that could just be shattering to a teen. And then I just think that makes the program, the football program, look real bad and in shambles because of what they did in shortening, I mean, in cutting their football program out of the sports.
Well, it's kind of hard to say, even though UAB basketball has been made a successful run, even though they lost to the second round, but the basketball program definitely built a huge boost. But it doesn't mean if they can regain the financial, is can they, you know, fix the financial issue that they had? Like, well, the attendance was also low at the UAB stadium, so it's kind of difficult to get back the football program like within a year or two. But if you consider it in a long run, maybe it will definitely help to bring the football program. But for, you know, for a year, 2 years, or 3 years of span, I don't think it's not gonna happen.
Here's something I remember talking with Marshall Men's golf coach Matt Grobe last year, before all of this situation really came to the front of the stage. We were talking about the fact that when you went on the website for UAB football last year and you tried to look ahead for 3 years to look at that schedule, there was nothing. There was no schedule. The coach was signed to a 3-year contract. There was nothing past that point. I mean, the writing was on the wall. It just took a little bit for those things to come out and say, okay, something is up here. And then finally somebody blew the whistle and really brought it to the forefront. But one of the things I think that we're really missing with the fact of the loss of UAB football and everybody that was involved there, from players to coaches and the staff and everything there, and it, unfortunately, the run that UAB basketball made really covers this up, is the fact that at the end of this season, UAB athletics may not have a home, because they are not going to be able to stay in Conference USA unless some changes are made that allows UAB to stay there, because Conference USA regulations and bylaws states that you have to be football. So now you're losing UAB basketball, which just inked their head coach to a big deal. You're going to lose UAB softball, which is a powerhouse. Basketball, men's and women's both, are fairly decent. Baseball has had an up and down run, but a decent program at that. UAB soccer, you're going to lose a significant piece of the pie of a great program. That, where are they going to go? You're going to go to A-10? You're going to go to the Big East? You know, you're basically dropping out of a very good mid-major program for a relegated mid-major program, that just so that you can stay above ground and still play. But at the same time, you're not going to have TV deals. You're not going to have ways to bring in revenue. And at the same time, when you start losing that issue, that's where you start losing your recruits. They start going other places because they want to be on TV. It's about the sex appeal. It's about what people can see me do. Now, people can't see me, I don't want to be there. And I think that all the way down the pipeline, everybody at UAB suffers because of a few, for the lack of better terms, goofballs that sit behind a desk, by the words that I'm allowed to say on the FCC regulations, that decided we need to take away football. Because while Akira said yes, the stadium, the attendance was down, this year it was up. And they had a great guy in there as a head coach that I think was, had he been allowed to have 2-3 years in that program, this is a UAB program that may had climbed out of that cellar. Bill Clark had a great program there. He had a great piece. And don't forget, UAB about knocked off Marshall down in Legion Field. Now, it's not UAB's fault that they had to go and play in a crap hole of a stadium at Legion Field. But at the same time, they were starting to put people in the stands. You had to give him a chance. He never had a chance. He was on a death sentence as soon as he took the job, and nobody bothered to tell him.
Now switching from the gridiron to the court, some NCAA basketball news. Former Georgia Tech star and NBA point guard Mark Price has agreed to become the new coach at UNC Charlotte, sources told ESPN earlier today. And Price, who's an assistant for the Charlotte Hornets for this season. How big of a hire is this for the Charlotte 49ers?
I think it's really, really huge. Like, hiring a former NBA star player will definitely help the program to increase the attendance, like what happened to Marshall basketball. Once they hire Coach D'Antoni, the attendance increased a lot. So from that standpoint, I think like James mentioned it a couple of times, like how the sex appeal, and also from that standpoint, it'll teach the players how to get over the hump, since, you know, he's been through all those tough moments, so he can teach how to players to go over that hump and to play at the another level. So it's really, really interesting moves. It's going to be for next college basketball season. Charlotte 49ers will make some kind of like a noise down in the stretch.
I mean, they had a good season to begin with. They did knock off Marshall one time, but for a head coach to go back to his roots and go back to his hometown, we've seen this a lot with small teams like Buffalo, for instance, with Bobby Hurley and him going back to the New Jersey, New York area. It's huge. Like Akir was saying, they can tell a young man and be like, I've been in your shoes, like I know what you're about to go through, and just play your heart out and just work hard. He can relate to that, and he went on a team and went to the league and had success there. Now, like he was saying, you can come back and try to help a team out. And they gave him a big deal because they think he's their guy and he's going to make a big splash in the near future.
The two things that I think really play into fact of Price taking this job, one, the conference that he's going to be playing in, Conference USA. And since Memphis left Conference USA, there's been kind of a waiting of what team is going to step forward and really ferment itself as the cream of the crop. No one has really yet to do that as of yet. Western Kentucky stepped up a little bit. You've had your Texas teams that's trying to move to the forefront, but nobody's really stamped their mark like Memphis did, have said it's Memphis and it's everyone else. This is, I think, the move that Charlotte's trying to look forward to and saying, we put the right guy in there. We've got a very lucrative area. Charlotte is a beautiful area. I just came back from it. I'm ready to go back. But at the same time, in a system of moving into a career to where it's not so much about what you do, it's who you know. And when you have a guy that has connections to the NBA front offices because he's a player, he's a former coach, hey, if it comes down to me going to play at Charlotte as compared to Western Kentucky, you know, no offense to Ron Harper, but hey, you didn't coach in the NBA. You don't have contacts at the front office of the NBA. This guy does. I'm going to Charlotte. And it may come down to that little bit of difference of the type of recruitment class that you bring in. Charlotte had a decent season this year. They played some great basketball. I think it's a great pickup for the program as a whole for Charlotte. I think it's also a great pickup for Conference USA because now it's starting to bring – you've got Coach D'Antoni here. You've got Mark Price. You're starting to bring these NBA eyes in. It's going to start bringing more influx to Conference USA. I think it only benefits everybody involved in the conference, not just Charlotte.
And do you see college universities and athletic directors maybe trying to target more NBA assistants, former players, to try and bring in that added bonus of maybe some more having that almost face of a program that's quite known in NBA circles and also helps on recruiting end as well, as James alluded to?
I think it relies on the opposite standpoint, like how NBA teams hiring college basketball head coaches because of their successful college head coach career. But I'm not seeing maybe what athletic director will approach to the NBA assistant coaches, but it's kind of hard to say it will necessarily going to happen, since it's a different animal, different sport, where go to pro and college basketball, the adjustment that they need to make, it's going to be hard. But I think Coach Calipari had some recruitment going on from NBA teams. I think there will be more of a NBA team that will reach to college basketball head coaches. I don't see it that's happening.
Did you just accuse Coach Calipari of recruiting?
No, he said the NBA coaches, I mean NBA teams, were recruiting him to be a head coach.
No, I heard him say Calipari's recruiting. I know what he's doing over there, Kira. He's over there trying to recruit NBA players to come play college basketball for a year. We know how this thing runs. No, I'm just kidding. But no, I think you bring up a good point there, is that you have the elements of bringing in these players to everybody, no matter what sport it is, whether it's basketball, football, baseball, anything. You have the goals from the day that you first start playing the game. You want to play at the highest level. If you did it, why play? But at the same time, when you can put people there that build that bridge to that ultimate level, I think any time you can get someone there that has a good reputation, I don't think it works in every case. In this case, I think because of the connection back to the area as well as what he brings to that area, I think it makes a good fit for Coach Price there in Charlotte. It'll be interesting to see how he works out in his first season next year.
Yeah, I'm going to bridge off what James was saying, is that it does not happen in every case that it's like a blessing in disguise. But like, for an instance, Isaiah Thomas, I mean, he coached in college and he went to the league. Then now he's back in college at a smaller school. And in general, like college coaches being recruited or like getting offers from NBA, I don't see why NBA, like what Akira was saying, can do the same with college.
What we'll do now is we'll step aside for a break and we'll get more NCAA basketball news as well as NFL news and MLB news on the other side of this break. You're listening to Sports Buzz on 88.1 WMUL-FM.
Did you hear that?
Yeah, I heard that.